Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to start the show today by talking about the connection between climate change and our healthcare system and the ways hospitals in our state are working to be more sustainable. Thanks again for joining us on WPR News. Couple of guests for you. Krista Wagner is with us. She's the founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin's Center for Sustainability, Health, and the Environment. We'll learn about that organization and what they're doing. She's also an assistant professor in the Division of Community Health. Krista Wagner, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you with us. With us as well, Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, who is a founding member of Healthy Climate Wisconsin. We'll be learning a lot about that as well. He's a UW Health and Children's Pediatrician and Assistant Professor in the Department of Pediatrics at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us. As we talk with our two guests, I hope you'll join in. Have you dealt with health consequences, maybe related to pollution or climate change? What's your story? Questions about what our two experts are and their groups are doing, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got an experience to share. Give a call to number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's WPR.org. Dr. Lewandowski, every medical student has to take the Hippocratic Oath. And one of the promises is, first, do no harm. As we talk about sustainability today, how does that oath ring a bell for you?
Yeah, I'm really, really happy that you brought that up, because first, do no harm is really the why for this work. You know, we can all talk about the how or the what, where, when, but when you come to all those question words, the why is this. And whether you're a physician, a nurse, an allied health professional, a public health professional, a healthcare administrator, the goal is to provide high quality care to everybody. And when you look at climate smart healthcare, that is the underlying goal, is to provide good quality, safe medical care for individuals and help them achieve and maintain health. And so that is the primary why.
What are the, let's look at the big picture. What are some, we'll get into the details as we go along, but on a global scale, shall we say, what are some of the biggest ways climate change affects human health?
There are a number of ways. In fact, there are about 9 different pathways that I can think of that climate change affects health. And I know a lot of times people think about how burning fossil fuels creates air pollutants that can trigger things like asthma exacerbations or COPD issues. But, you know, as global temperatures rise, we see with things like extreme heat waves, people who have seizure disorders might struggle because of medication management or poor sleep that may trigger seizures. How to safely store medication. So insulin has very strict guidelines for how we're supposed to store our insulin. When we think about the wildfire smoke and how that affects individuals, even people who don't have pre-existing healthcare conditions, a child has a faster respiratory rate than adults. And so they breathe in more pollutants per kilogram of body weight that they are. And so just by being a child, they're disproportionately harmed by things like breathing in the wildfire smoke, or even just being located next to a fossil fuel plant like a methane gas or a natural gas plant or a coal-fired power plant. So there are a lot of different ways that the current operations that are causing climate change, in addition to the climate change itself, can be impacting human health.
Krista, what are a few ways that the healthcare system negatively impacts the environment? That's something you're kind of working on, I think. Go ahead.
And to Andrew's point, something we're trying to address because of that Hippocratic Oath and the great irony in the health sector that our mission is to improve the health of everybody, but we also are really energy intensive institutions. And at a place like Medical College of Wisconsin, we're affiliated with level one trauma centers. They need to be open 24/7. Those operating rooms need to be ready for patients at any time. So it's that balance of thinking about running electricity 24/7, reusable products, disposable products. Our anesthetic gases contribute greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. So every aspect of care we provide has something to consider with a climate lens. How can we be better stewards of our environment so we're not contributing as much waste, as much greenhouse gas emission to our environment?
Yeah. Well, do you have some numbers on the amount of emissions and material waste the hospitals generate?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think an underappreciated aspect to the health sector. So, in the United States, the health sector is responsible for anywhere from 8.5% to 10% of US greenhouse gas emissions every year. So, close to 10% of US emissions every year are coming from hospitals, pharmaceuticals. And when you compare the US health sector to global partners, we're disproportionate emitters. So the US health sector represents 25% of global health sector emissions. So we really have a lot of room for improvement here.
And I was talking with Andrew before the show, and globally, in the global health sector, if it were a country, it would be the fifth largest carbon emitter in the world.
Our US emissions are more than all of the United Kingdom, is another way to think about it. So our health sector is more than many countries.
Wow. Well, I can see why. Dr. Lewandowski, I'll turn to you here for a minute. You helped found Healthy Climate Wisconsin. Tell us a bit about your organization. I'm going to ask Krista about hers as well, but go ahead and talk about yours.
Yeah, so Healthy Climate Wisconsin is an amazing organization. It's a group of anyone even remotely healthcare adjacent. So we have individuals who are physicians who have been in physician leadership roles, but we also have nurses and pharmacists. We have even administrative assistants who are in healthcare who are part of our organization. And the goal is about equitable decarbonization, and it's about achieving climate justice solutions that we know are going to be in the best interest of everybody's health. And I think historically people have thought about climate change about a polar bear on a quickly or rapidly shrinking iceberg. And while there's some truth to that, I think enough people don't realize that climate change intimately affects everybody's health, whether they realize it or not.
So anybody can, pretty much anybody can join.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we welcome people with open arms, and we have a number of different ways that people can get involved, whether it has to do with our climate smart healthcare teams or our policy and advocacy teams. We have a variety of ways for people to get involved. So if you are interested, please see our website and reach out to us, and we can tell you how you could find your area.
Yeah, and we can get into some of those specific areas as we move along. But Krista, you're the founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin's Center for Sustainability, Health, and Environment. You have a, by the way, a wonderful a background to bring to bear. I know your PhD is from Johns Hopkins University, where you studied cellular molecular medicine, and then had some really good job experiences to kind of set you up for this. So tell us about the center and your goals there.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background, yes, does also cover policy at the federal level, and so it's interdisciplinary partnerships. And in my last role, I was working at the national level for an organization that represents all medical schools in the country. So that was a fantastic opportunity to see how different academic medical centers were addressing the climate crisis, thinking about being more sustainable. And the Medical College of Wisconsin has a really active student population that was really wanting the institution to do more in this space. And the center was created just over 2 years ago to really bring a climate lens to the four missions of our institution, which are education, research, patient care, and community engagement. So that's really how I look at my role, is to engage everyone across our campus, whether they focus on one mission or another, and bring that climate lens to their work.
Yeah. Well, you know, at first glance, it might seem like quality healthcare, you know, it requires, you need a lot of energy and you need a lot of materials. I mean, just go to the, this is the very smallest part of it, but I've had, because of some family health issues, I've had to be in hospitals more than I would like recently. And I noticed just the number of times nurses and doctors put their gloves on, rubber gloves on, and throw them away. That always just amazes me, but that's just a drop in the bucket, I'm thinking here.
Yeah, and I think infection prevention is an important piece of healthcare delivery. Andrew talked about we're trying to provide the highest quality care that we can. So it's a balancing act of what are the risks of not taking on every infection prevention measure, wearing a new set of gloves every time I go into a room, versus the environmental impact. So that's the give and take that I encourage my peers on campus to think about. Do we need to use sterile water for every non-sterile procedure that we perform? And those are questions that I pose and have discussions with these diverse groups of stakeholders. All of the providers, infection prevention specialists, supply chain specialists, to ask those questions in different clinical settings.
How difficult is that? I mean, how easy has it been to find energy-saving solutions? Let me put it that way.
There are many opportunities to identify energy-saving and cost-saving solutions. They're often co-benefits. Which is a great thing. So when we think about the many different ways that our health sector emits greenhouse gases, it can be directly from the buildings themselves. So I mentioned anesthetic gases are major contributors to greenhouse gases. So we can think about the different gases available to our providers and look at the spectrum of potency and ask providers to think about using a different gas if it has the same quality outcome for patients. But there's a lot of different ways. Food services, all of the materials that we order to our campuses every day, how our staff and faculty get to campus every day, thinking about single occupants and vehicles, that all contributes to what is included in the calculation of emissions from the health sector.
Yeah. Dr. Lewandowski, what are some suggestions or sustainable solutions, let me put it that way, that you've seen at hospitals around Wisconsin?
Well, I think those solutions can range the gamut from kind of cherry-picking easy solutions all the way up to large solar arrays on top of medical centers or hospitals. I know a lot of times people think about things like solar and these huge upfront costs, but some of these solutions are as simple as just changing your air handling or exhaust fan schedules, or making sure that you are heating or cooling locations when they're actually occupied versus when they're not occupied. Letting temperatures drop to an environment that's safe for the building, but not necessarily comfortable for people when they're not occupying it.
Yeah.
So, and there's all sorts of retrofitting, and these are things that save on energy and they decrease waste, but they also have a humongous financial impact that's positive for each of these facilities that implement them. I mean, it's cost savings around the board, which I think everybody in healthcare is looking for a way to save costs, especially in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've got a lot more for you here, but I want to just remind everybody that you can join in too. Questions or comments, experience to share, give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org as we visit with Krista Wagner, founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin Center for Sustainability, Health, and the environment, and Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, who is founding member of Healthy Climate Wisconsin, also a pediatrician. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at sustainability and healthcare with our two guests today who are involved in organizations that are working to make our healthcare industry more sustainable, cut waste, cut emissions that can affect us all, and a whole lot more. And we'll get some more details on some of the things they're doing as we move along. You can join in again, the number 800-642-1234, or you could email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Before we go to the phones, Krista, maybe you could talk a bit more on waste. How are you working with providers to reduce waste in the hospital?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are several different ways to work on this issue. I think one way we've been successful is working with surgeons. So the operating room is the most energy intensive place in the hospital. Andrew talked about the air handling and the temperature modifications. So that's one way to think about energy use in the OR. But also having providers be thoughtful about the things that they bring into the operating room for a given procedure. When you're in that sterile environment, if the materials are brought into the room, they get thrown away if they aren't consumed. So this is an opportunity to challenge my colleagues to think about, do I really need all of these things in the room for this procedure? Can it be in the hallway so that if I do need it, one of my staff colleagues can go retrieve it? And then different ways of doing the same procedure, whether you're using a robot or a laparoscopic procedure, those two different ways to perform the same surgery have really different impacts in terms of waste generation and cost. And so those are things I even encourage patients to ask their providers if they're going in for a surgical procedure where they have some time to consider their options. There are different environmental impacts.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you why are those two specific ones so different in terms of their environmental cost?
So when you're working with a robot, it has its own materials that come with the robot from the manufacturer, and you won't be using those materials if you're performing the procedure in a more traditional fashion. Andrew can certainly weigh in here too. He's the actual medical doctor, but it's just different materials that are used depending on whether you're having a robotic procedure or laparoscopic. So thinking about what materials are in the room to help my provider perform the procedure.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's really important to balance safety with every aspect. But I remember even in medical school, in the OR, there were these suction devices that were run on battery power, and there would be a whole bunch of AA batteries that at the end of one procedure would all just get tossed. I remember my attending physician as a medical student saying, "Hey, Andrew, do you need some AA batteries?" Because they were just going to get thrown out, because there's always that question of, well, how many times can I use this? How, you know, because when you need it, you need it. But to Krista's point, I mean, the UW plastic surgery team removed 9 infrequently used items from their plastic surgery packs. And that's been great at decreasing plastic waste. And then it's also allowed UW to have an annual cost savings of about $10,000 a year.
Woo.
And so these are, and that's just a matter of what we put into packages. It's nothing major. And so it's these little things that when you evaluate things and you think about it from a climate smart standpoint, that stuff can really add up.
Let's take some calls. Ivy in Evansville, we'll go to you first. What's on your mind, Ivy?
Hi. When my mother-in-law was in the hospital for a couple of weeks, I was looking out the window at the rooftop of a pretty large hospital, and it was black. And, there, you know, I thought, what if there were solar panels all on this roof, and or those spiral wind, windmills? And thinking that well, if there was a blackout, at least they'd have some alternative to keep things going, and it might not power everything, but it was this whole waste of space.
Yeah.
And a black room.
Ivy, thanks for calling. I'll get comments from maybe both of you. Let's start with you, Krista.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Ivy, and great eyesight noting opportunities for more environmental stewardship on our hospital campuses. I think that's one that usually comes down to financial consideration for the hospitals. At Frater Hospital, which is one of MCW's affiliates, there are some solar panels that were in part supported financially by a philanthropic donor from the community because they felt really strongly about introducing renewable energy resources to our campus. And so the hospital partnered with that philanthropist and put the first solar panels on our campus. But as we expand, our particular health system is building a new clinic in Appleton, and they have put in geothermal wells. So they will have geothermal energy powering that new clinic. So there are always opportunities. Finances are usually a big part of the conversation. But Andrew, you work at a place with lots of solar panels. I don't know if you have additional feedback.
Yeah, I think that is incredibly important that for the organizations or individuals who have the capacity to reduce their energy use, increase their energy energy efficiency and increase renewable energy production, that they should do that. And at the same time, I think it is super important that we don't lose sight of the fact that comprehensive climate change reform or strategies so that everything gets to net zero is something that fundamentally needs to be done at a global level with our utility companies, needs to be done through legislative action, needs to be done through all government entities. And so while as members of the community and organization and businesses, we can work to help decrease that burden by doing whatever part we're capable of doing, that it's important not to lose sight of the major changes that need to happen.
And you know what? I'm remembering an example from the work that your folks have done with Dairyland Power that was going to put in a gas plant in northern Wisconsin, I believe. And the flow of the pollution was going to go over the native community up there, and through some efforts of people who are members of healthcare of your organization, Healthy Climate Wisconsin, working with Dairyland, my recollection is that the amount of pollution is being, well, go ahead, is being drastically reduced.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important to realize a few things. So first of all, even though my organization, our organization works really closely with a number of different entities to try to decrease fossil fuel consumption and use, that we're not this really excited fringe group of doctors, but the American Medical Association, the American Public Health Association, over 100 different major health organizations have declared climate change a health emergency. And the evidence shows unequivocally that humans are causing our Earth to change in a way that is unfit for our health. And so that's kind of where our action stems from. And things like, you'll hear people talk about natural gas, clean natural gas, biogas, methane gas. There are all sorts of ways to call gas gas. But at the end of the day, things like nitrogen oxides and carbon dioxide and sulfur dioxide and particulate matter 2.5 and all these other things that people may or may not know about are things that are emitted from these fossil fuel plants, regardless if it's coal, oil, quote-unquote natural gas, methane gas. And so when those are emitted, they have very real health impacts on the people who are in those communities. And so it's really important as doctors that we make people aware of that in the communities that those places are going in so that they have an informed decision to make for those communities. And so when we were working with the individuals of any community.
Yeah.
That's really our job, not to sell them on anything, but just to let them know if this natural gas plant goes in, here's what you can expect from a health standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I guess in the Dairyland case, they've made huge changes and are adding many more renewables to that whole plan and drastically reducing the amount of emissions.
Well, and it's really important too. People don't always realize this, but once a power plant or any kind of power infrastructure is created, the system by which it operates, it's very difficult to decommission it from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like committing to your 30-year mortgage and not being able to sell your house again, you know?
I mean, yeah.
And so it's one of those things where once it's in, it's in. And that's why it's so important that we get people to understand that we can't say, oh, let's have this methane gas, natural gas plant now, and then maybe 10 years from now, we'll switch things over to something else. That's not quite how it works.
Yeah. Charles in Antigo, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Charles. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. I'm a student at the MCW campus in Wausau. I wanted to say thank you so much for having this topic. I believe the Gunderson Healthcare campus in La Crosse is 100% renewable, but my question was, as a healthcare provider, what kind of like more credible organizations can we go to our administrators and say, hey, look, this is what they're recommending. Why can't we do this? And kind of try to move the conversation forward.
Oh, good questions. I bet both of our guests have some answers for that. Krista, you want to start?
Sure. Charles, thanks for calling in. It's nice to hear your voice. MCW does have two regional campuses, and I appreciate you calling in today. Great point about Gunderson. That's a health system that had a fantastic leader, Jeff Thompson, who was really committed to environmental stewardship and decades ago set his organization on a path towards carbon neutrality through several different methods, renewable energy sources, and working with local businesses to reduce waste and recycle and reuse. So yes, we love to look towards these organizations both in Wisconsin and across the country that have creative solutions to reducing their carbon footprint and their energy use. So it's really a matter of bringing ideas forward that are bite-sized and manageable to think about. What resources do you have on your campus that you can build off of? To Andrew's point about the natural gas plants, you know, once you install that infrastructure, you're not going to change it in 5 or 10 years. It's a really large financial investment. So we might not turn into Gunderson Healthcare in the next 5 years, but what are small steps we can chip away and start reducing our impact through other mechanisms other than flipping over to renewable energy overnight?
Andrew?
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough how collaborative and helpful the climate smart space is. And it doesn't really matter what healthcare system you're from. If you want to look into ideas that other places are implementing and data that we have and things that we do, all of that information is very free flowing. I think if you're looking for specific resources, of course, I would love it if people, and especially in Wisconsin, wanted to join Healthy Climate Wisconsin and our Climate Smart healthcare team that we have. But there's also the National Academy of Medicine, there's Practice Green Health, there's Healthcare Without Harm, and there are leaders across the country in the climate smart space who have ideas. And so hopefully with at least with local leaders, we can help provide those resources that might be more applicable to what it is that you're trying to implement, because we know healthcare fills so many spaces.
And you need some data too to go along with this. I mean, in Charles' case, as an example, you need to be able to say, well, here's what you're going to be costing, or here's the amount of environmental damage that will be caused by a particular you know, plan that you're thinking about.
Yeah, it's incredibly important that when you start these, when you start to identify ideas for improvement, that you have measurable outcomes. And whether those outcomes are emissions, cost, pounds of waste that are diverted from a landfill or a hazardous materials facility processing system, that you really want to measure that. And the nice thing is that regardless of what you do, whether you feel it's low-hanging fruit or something that's really challenging, the vast majority of these projects almost always have a payback. And the payback is usually very quick from a cost standpoint. We're talking about a return on investment where if you invest a certain amount of money, you may make them back in less than 2 years, and then it will continue to generate cost savings beyond that 2 year payback period. So there's really a lot of benefit in this space.
I'm thinking about something else I saw on your site, which involved sustainable healthcare certificates for U.S. hospitals.
Yeah. So as we enter into an area that people are interested in learning more about, whether it's how to learn about climate change and how it impacts health, how to communicate about climate and health with patients, how to green your own operations within a healthcare system. We recognize nationally that there is a large need for programs that people can turn to so that they can gain that knowledge and expertise so that they can be healthcare leaders in sustainability in their own community. And so a lot of these certificate programs, many of them are associated with academic institutions, offer that framework and curriculum so that individuals can learn from each other about whatever climate-related health impact they want to make.
We have and Charles from Antigo, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it very much. And we have a number of emails. A listener emailed, would like to hear comments regarding medical waste entering our environment, the disposal of medicines, radioactive biotics, the use of contract laundry services. They've been in these facilities, and this person says, I'm shocked by what I've seen. Sharps, feces, et cetera, all falling out of the laundry bags coming in from medical facilities. Absolutely everything's get tossed into these laundry bags. Are these laundries held to any standards?
I didn't know if you were going to take that, Krista. I'm happy to take that. You know, there are a number of, so there are, to answer that question specifically, yes, there are standards for how we handle and process waste. And I think that if there's something that is being mishandled, then that's something that needs to change at a facilities level. I mean, we certainly shouldn't see feces falling out of bags across the floor. I mean, that's something that's a process that would need to be improved for that facility. But what I can say is there are very specific ways that we process or reprocess waste. And UW Health, that's actually one of the main ways that they sort of started their sustainability journey was through waste audits. You know, if we have hazardous materials like a needle or a syringe that was used, that has a very specific way of getting reprocessed through, sterilization to make sure that the germs that were on that device or potential germs that were on the device are no longer on that device when it's finally put into its a landfill or appropriate waste receptacle. But at the same time, a paper towel that someone used to wash their hand does not need to be processed in the same way that a syringe or a medical device needs to be processed. And so major emission savings or ways that we can help with waste reduction is at the very least just by making sure you put your trash in the trash, recycling and recycling, and hazardous materials and hazardous materials containers. And even something as simple as that can have major emissions outcomes, major improvements in health outcomes and cost savings.
Thinking about my academic department, Life Sciences Communications, done some work here on campus with that, just in terms of getting students to do what you just said, put the recyclables in the recyclable, and you know, and just better ways to communicate at the site, so that people do it and just don't toss everything in the trash. And to your point, Aiden in Egg Harbor had emailed us. He's wondering if there have been any new alternatives that have come about in order to replace single-use objects, gloves and needles and so forth, without compromising the safety of the patient and the overall hygiene. He'd imagine the process of sterilizing reusable materials and tools would be exorbitant in and of itself. You think?
Yeah, yeah. There are certainly new products coming on board. I think this whole concept of sustainable healthcare has really expanded so much in the last 5 to 10 years. You're seeing more hospitals asking their supply chain managers and their vendors, what are your sustainable practices, and making financial decisions for the materials we bring to our campus based on sustainability policies that these vendors have in place. So we're seeing more and more, quote, green products available, seeing new ideas for recycling and reuse, and have at our fingertips the ability to do some calculations to see the cost benefit of reusing a device versus a single use, and to bring into consideration the washing, the disinfectant steps. So we have the ability to do that comparison, compare and contrast. I think one other idea that's come to our campus recently that ties into the last question is iodine recycling. So it's a contrast material used for imaging. And now one of the providers that uses iodine in their machines is offering a recycling service. So that's something we're considering, rather than having more liquid waste to figure out how to handle it properly. Is there an opportunity to reduce our waste and reuse a product that's used a lot for our imaging?
Yeah. Andrew, anything? Go ahead.
Absolutely. Reprocessing single-use devices is something that's incredibly important. And certainly, you know, I'm not going to be reusing a suture, you know, I mean, but things like endoscopes, which are cameras that you can pass into the body to perform a medical procedure, often those are made to be single-use. And so there are reprocessing companies who specialize in sterilizing and reprocessing those endoscopes that can be used again. And to the, I don't know if it was a caller or email, but to their point about how the reprocessing may take emissions or resources, that's very true. However, we also have to think about the embodied carbon that was used to create that device, the mining of the metals that go into the computer chips for devices, or the lenses that are made, or the flexible components and the metal components of each device. You know, single use does not necessarily mean that it's just plastic. There are some very major medical devices that are made from multiple components that are seen as single use and then thrown away.
Yeah. Talking today with Krista Wagner, who is the founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin Center for Sustainability, Health, and the Environment, and Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, who is a founding member of Healthy Climate Wisconsin and a pediatrician at UW. It's great to have both of them with us. Questions for them, you can give a call. We'll have open lines get you on pretty quick. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us. I've got lots more emails to read as well here. The email address, talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at our healthcare and sustainability in healthcare with our two guests today, Krista Wagner, founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin Center for Sustainability, Health, and the Environment, and Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, founding member of Healthy Climate Wisconsin, a UW pediatrician. As well, at noon, we're going to switch gears entirely and talk about ice fishing, and then we'll take a look at 12:30 at the results of a report about waste again, but this time food waste. The DNR has some interesting numbers on how much food we waste, and I imagine some of that happens in hospitals as well, Krista.
Yeah, I was hoping you would bring up the food waste. I think this is a space where our whole campus has done really well over the last couple of years. So both MCW and our hospital affiliate, Children's Wisconsin, have started composting from our back of house kitchens in the last couple of years. And combined, we're looking at about 20,000 pounds of food scraps a year going to the compost instead of to the landfill. So that's maybe a way that most people don't think about how we can reduce our impact in terms of waste. But there's a lot of food that we make at our campus, providing food for our patients and their families and our students, staff, faculty. I'd also like to give kudos to Frederick Hospital. They partnered with a local food pantry and now are diverting uneaten food that was prepared for patients, but was never sent to a patient room or never sold in the cafeteria. And that prepared food is now going to the food pantry, and they're looking at about 20,000 4-ounce servings of food that have been donated to the food pantry in a year. So we can't always reduce food waste to zero, but we look for creative solutions to support our community.
Kind of to go along with that, I see an email from Sarah in Appleton with a comment. Ascension Street, Ascension Saint Elizabeth partnered with Riverview Gardens, a quarter mile away, for garden and hydroponic grown food. Riverview employs people in the COTS housing program, giving them a place to be, developing job skills, and improving physical and mental health for those individuals. So it's another way it gets used. We have Mary emailing us. This is maybe a little different question. We've got a vet school here on campus. I don't think you guys do at the Medical College of Wisconsin, but Mary emailed us and wonders how can veterinary facilities get involved in this greening of medicine. And why not?
Well, I can tell you as a physician, I am shocked how much the work that I get to do in my clinical settings overlaps with some of the things that I have friends in veterinary medicine, and we've compared notes before, and I've been really surprised at the number of tests that we run that are maybe different reference ranges and maybe obtained different ways, but have very similar crossovers. And I think it's important that the healthcare sector or the veterinary health sector or any sector within healthcare pays careful attention to waste reduction and energy efficiency. But I think arguably the same should be said for every organization in a community. So regardless of if you're remotely associated with a vet school or a medical school, if there are ways that you can improve your energy use, reduce energy use, you're actually improving the health of the people around you.
Kelly emailed us to say that Mano a Mano is an organization that takes medical donations, which gets unused medical supplies to people in need and thus reducing medical waste. Are you familiar with Mano a Mano?
I am not familiar with Mano a Mano. I think that as long as things are being responsibly and safely diverted to additional ways that they can be used, that that's something that I would be in support of. Obviously, the importance is on making sure that that safety and processing happens. But Krista, I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I'm not familiar, but I'm going to look them up. Thanks, Kelly.
Absolutely.
Tom in Mount Calvary emailed us. He's wondering what your guests would say to people who simply refuse to believe in climate change. And this would include many in government. And just as a side note, I noted the EPA, I don't know if this really, yeah, it does, EPA's recent decision to stop factoring public health benefits into certain air pollution regulations.
You know, this is something that I actually deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, my job is to be a physician. I am not a sales rep. I am not anyone other than somebody who just cares about the people in my community and in the world as a global citizen. And so, whether somebody agrees with me or not is not necessarily the point. My job as a doctor, as a professional, is to do the best that I can to provide the most sound, scientific, evidence-based knowledge that we have to help people achieve and maintain health. And so if someone comes into my clinic and I talk to them about climate change and health, it's not because I, you know, want to politicize my healthcare environment. It's because I realize that there are very real impacts that happen to the patients that I serve. And so I'm happy to have a respectful conversation with anybody. And if there are tensions or things that people are passionate about, I want to hear about what they have to say, whether they agree with me or not. But I would say the best medical evidence now, I mean, we have plenty of scientific evidence to say that humans are unequivocally changing the climate on our planet, and that has genuine health impacts for the people on the planet. It's like that old adage of fleas on the dog, you know. Mm-hmm. Regardless of if you see the whole dog, if the dog's not doing well, the fleas aren't doing well.
The whole business of climate change and demographic factors has always intrigued me, and I've had a few authors on the show who've talked about some of this. Race and poverty affects people's vulnerability to climate change and their health.
Absolutely. So a person's climate change vulnerability is actually, that there's an equation for that, which is vulnerability for an individual is equal to their climate change exposure, whatever that may be, wildfire, smoke, extreme heat, et cetera, plus their underlying sensitivity, which, you know, children are disproportionately harmed by climate change, excuse me, or if you have a medical condition, or if as a result of things like a legacy of racism, you are cited closer to particulate matter pollution, and then minus their adaptive capacity, so the ability to sort of decrease the effects of those first two, the exposure and the sensitivity. So that's really the main way that we would calculate that or try to do that. But to the point of equity, we know that there are the haves and the haves not and the have nots. And there are a number of ways that people have come into that realm. And certainly racial discrimination is a part of that. Gender discrimination is a part of that. And so those are communities who are hit first and worst by the harms of climate change, which are these climate change is really an amplifier and an accelerator of existing chronic conditions. It itself is not a disease.
And once again, there I was on your site and looking at a community project in Beloit, where they, I think based in part on education, they got together some community members and installed air monitoring devices all over Beloit, and then were able to document where the worst problems in terms of air existed.
Yeah, absolutely. There are all sorts of opportunities for
it's
improvement.
It's a community thing.
It is a community thing. And I think something to mention, you know, as I'm bringing up these heavy topics like legacies of racism, is the reason we bring this up is not necessarily to guilt anyone. I don't want people to feel horrible about everything. It's about using failures from the past to inform solutions of the future so that as we're creating those solutions, that it raises all boats. And that it makes our communities more resilient, and so that it tries to level the playing field. And for communities of color, for women, for rural communities, for deeply urban communities, there are a number of individuals who, as a result of societal inequities, they are disproportionately harmed. And so how can we acknowledge that and make sure that as we come up with solutions that we are factoring that into the equation rather than making things worse by continuing with a status quo that hurts them?
Well, you both are doing outstanding work, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Love to have you back down the road. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Krista Wagner, founding director of the Medical College of Wisconsin Center for Sustainability, Health, and the Environment, and Dr. Andrew Lewandowski, founding member of Healthy Climate Wisconsin, a UW pediatrician. Well, they're doing some great work, aren't they? We're going to get them back down the road and see what kind of progress is going on here in the state of Wisconsin. It's great to have them with us. We're going to turn our attention to the outdoors next. You ever been ice fishing? I've done a lot of ice fishing over time. We'll find out some more about what's going on here in the state with ice fishing. I'm Larry Mueller.